Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
It is a great day to be alive in Pittsburgh, PA. Welcome in, friends, Yinzers, countrymen, another early edition of Cabale and Mac so the Kaboom can get on down to OTA number 3, which is happening this afternoon down on the south side. Follow us for absolutely everything you need to know on X, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and of course on YouTube, Cabale and Mac. 1,560 subscribers now. 1,560 wonderful people who have joined the fray, joined the fold, and are now subscribing and have a shot to win an autographed Paul Skeens baseball, because that's our next giveaway from First and Goal Sports. Yeah, this one's a biggie. We'll get to Skeens. We got plenty of buckos to talk about today. They might have some life. They might have a pulse, Kaboom. Don't give me that look. Kevin Gorman of the Trib, who covers the Buccos, will join us. Just a couple minutes after 9 o'clock this morning. So in about a half hour, for those of you watching on a tape delay, we are presented by the Dan Heck Team, heckteamhomes.com, H-A-E-C-K. Your key to your next home is waiting for you by getting in touch with Dan, Michelle, Jeremy, the entire team at heckteamhomes.com. We appreciate them sponsoring the program. It was a busy day yesterday, Kaboom. You were down there standing in the rain, watching OTAs.
It was raining.
There was a Bucco game. Skeens was pitching, so everybody was locked in on that yesterday afternoon.
Forget the infamous shot up my nostrils.
Oh, what are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about, shot up your nostrils. What do you mean?
Here's the thing. Let me explain this. There's always an explanation. Get that off the screen already.
Why? You referenced it.
Now it's going to be all over the place.
And all over the place.
First of all, I have no clue that he's calling. I'm walking out. It's like 3, 2, whatever. And I get a random FaceTime. I normally get it from Zito. So
okay.
Random number comes up. I'm like, random FaceTime. Nope, nobody FaceTimes me. So this must be Pat. Boom, right to the program.
Right on the air.
I have no idea what they're talking about. I have no clue at all. Nothing. And I'm walking.
No idea what JJ had said at all at that point.
I have nothing. I have no idea what they're talking about. I have nothing. And I walk out into the indoor facility, and there's about 10 Steelers just sitting there. And I'm like, oh, geez, I'm probably not supposed to be looking at this. And I got terrible eyes. So I'm squinting. I'm like, I think that's Will Howard, and that's what you get right there.
The view up the nostrils?
Yeah, it was a terrible answer to a question because I had no idea what he was talking about, of why Terry's not thought appreciated here. So let me get this off my chest real quick. Pittsburgh people, as you know, Mac, are they hold grudges.
No, we don't.
So, first of all, Terry's first – you know, the 70s into the 80s, he was, I don't have to tell you this, but I'm explaining myself.
No, explain it for the younger generation out there that are trying to get caught up on the Terry Bradshaw, City of Pittsburgh, Steelers Nation dynamic. Should I play the clip from Bradshaw first, or you want to go over it first?
I'll just go real quick. We don't have to spend that much time on it. I'm just explaining the fact that the first half of that decade that was mostly running and defense, right?
Right.
Then the second half is more Terry.
And let's not forget, it took Bradshaw three years to really secure the starting quarterback gig. had to fight out Joe Gilliam, Terry Hanratty, finally secures the gig, and then it takes a couple more years to win the Super Bowl.
He is appreciated to a degree here, but then what's the no-no in Pittsburgh, man? Not showing up to functions, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much having nothing to do with the city when he did not show up to the Chiefs funeral.
Didn't show up to Chuck Knoll's either.
Showed up to the Chuck Knoll's funeral. I think I'm right on the Chief one.
Yep.
That rubbed people the wrong way. Then you put in Ben's major success with a younger generation there. And that's why people probably don't see Terry Bradshaw as that elite, elite guy. People hold grudges in the city, and they'll hold grudges for Kenny Pickett forever, right or wrong, indifferent. And they're going to hold some sort of grudge toward Terry Bradshaw, and they're going to hold some type of grudge in Mon City to Joe Montana. Just how the city works, man.
Well,
I think there's some people that appreciate Terry and what he's able to do.
Dude, but you go back and look at the stuff Bradshaw did. It's not so much about the numbers, because quarterback numbers in the 70s were trash compared to what they are now. But just go back and watch some tape of what that dude did, especially, like you said, in the back half of the 70s for the younger generation out there. Go back and watch highlights of
his own plays.
13 and 14 runs, right? And that dude was slinging.
Plays, baby.
He was slinging, but he's also very opinionated. And look, that's been his job for the last 40 years, is to be opinionated, right? That's what they hired him for at CBS and then Fox, is to tell people what he's thinking. So, and he's also got, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, because I don't really hold a major grudge against Terry Bradshaw. I was brought up, everybody in my family talk shit on Terry all the time, because for the same reason you just described, he didn't come back to the city, wasn't tight with Steeler fans or, you know, people in Pittsburgh. But I got over it eventually and realized just what I said. You go back and watch the tape, the dude's slang. But he does have a little bit of down home Louisiana in him, which means he gets around his boys and he starts talking. He can run his mouth just a little bit and tell you exactly what he's thinking, which is exactly what happened the other day on a station in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Possibly Aaron Rodgers being the quarterback. That's a joke. That is just to me a joke. What are you going to bring him in for 1 year? Are you kidding me? I mean,
that's not the Steelers' way, right?
No, man. That guy needs to stay in California. Go
thank you
somewhere and,
thank
and
you.
Chew on bark and whisper to the gods out there.
So Terry, not a fan of the Aaron Rodgers idea.
He just named every single Steelers season since Ben retired, too, right?
Pretty
much. One and done. You see, there's a lot of players, former players, that have been highly critical of this team and how this organization has moved forward over the past 5, 6, 7 years. One difference. They're around. They show their face. They show up places. They're all Steelers at heart. This guy hasn't been around for 20 years, and he's chiming in on calling Tomlin this, calling Cowher this, calling Ben this. But I think that goes a while.
I don't fault him for that. That's his job, to have opinions.
He doesn't show up where these other guys get their pass, like the Ryan Clarks and the James Harrisons and the Brett Kiesels. All those guys have been critical.
But it is Terry's job to be critical. You're right. The problem is he doesn't show up to face the music. When's the last time he was here? Like 15 years ago?
I know
came
he
out
showed
for
up for a game at halftime with his. He was too afraid to come out onto the field and brought his two daughters with him.
Right, and that was
he got standing ovation and
10, 15 years ago, and people still, like you said, gave him a standing O. So I'm not sure what he's so afraid about, or if he just doesn't have. I mean, he's got plenty of time in the offseason to come around if he wanted to.
On the flip side, I think most of Steelers Nation maybe agrees with what he said.
Well, yeah, and he also went on a bit of a diatribe about how Kenny Pickett didn't get much help when he was here as well, which coincidentally, guess who spoke up in Berea, Ohio yesterday?
For my time in Philly, I think I just, you know, was showing how it's supposed to be done, really, from the top down. So when you get a chance to see what it's supposed to look like and how it should look on a day-to-day basis, not just on Sundays, you know, I think it'll pay dividends for me, you know, in the future.
He saw how it was...
Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Done in Philly, kaboom. Kenny Pickett.
So much of a trade.
A little bit of a sideways shot, maybe.
I don't think it's sideways. I think it was straight on full. Forget those soft tip darts. That was
he went with the old school screw on metal tips.
Yes, and he sharpened it up a little bit right there. But if they showed him the right way in Philadelphia, they also showed him the door quite quickly, too.
Yeah, I mean, they know what Kenny is. And look. People get on me, hey, Penn State guy, that's why you don't like Kenny. I'll agree with what Bradshaw had to say about Kenny, which is he didn't get much of a chance here. He didn't get much help, I should say. He got a chance, but he didn't get much help before he got thrown to the Wolves, right? Four or five games into the season, no first-team reps with the offense in training camp, none of that. They just, have at it, kid. Trubisky sucks. It's your turn. And
almost sounds like what they did to Mason in 2019,
yeah, when Ben got hurt.
Hey, kid, we didn't want to take you any snaps, but go have at it.
Well, there is a greater point here, which is that, and we've said this before, after 15 years of having Ben Roethlisberger at his disposal, Mike Tomlin has failed. The organization as a whole, but Mike Tomlin specifically, as basically the head of the organization, has failed to put together some sort of quarterback development plan. Right? Mason didn't have a quarterback's coach. Kenny got thrown to the Wolves 4 to 5 weeks in. Didn't have a great offensive line in front of him, as Bradshaw noted as well. And it does make you want, you know, people have all these wonderful thoughts about what Will Howard might become as a developmental sixth round pick. Okay, they have a decent quarterback's coach now in Tom Arth, but I'm still holding my breath waiting to see Mike Tomlin develop a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you pretty much describe why they're interested in Aaron Rodgers, why they brought Mason Rudolph back, why they wanted Russell Wilson, why they brought Mitch Trubisky in. I think he's like, I want these veteran voices around because I'm not quite – I would never say I'm not quite sure of developing. First of all, it's not Mike Tomlin's job to develop a quarterback. It's him hiring people who can develop a quarterback.
But that does feed into the narrative. That does feed into the narrative, though, that exists, rightly or wrongly, fairly or unfairly, that the guy doesn't put together the best staffs all the time, right? Like, if he doesn't have a former or soon-to-be head coach, a really established guy, you know, think back to the, you know, when there was Wisenhunt and Grimm, and then you had LeBeau in the fold, Munchak. I mean, when he's had really strong veteran presence underneath him as assistants, okay, things move along pretty well. When he puts together his own staff, it doesn't necessarily always pan out.
So then we sit there and complain and he hasn't have a tree. Maybe the tree didn't work. Maybe the tree is the route. I like the route them bringing in veteran or former head coaches at that time to be able to be that. I mean, they brought in Terrell Austin to be a backup or a secondary coach to, you know, give him a trial run, then hired him. Same thing with Matt Canada. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that. Maybe after a while, he should have realized maybe these guys weren't the best choices for
Job. That's the problem.
And I'm saying more Canada.
I get the sense sometimes that Mike has too strong a sense of loyalty sometimes to some of his assistants, not all of them. Because some of them he'll cast aside after a year if they prove that they're not up to the job. I think there was an O-line coach a few years ago that got that treatment.
Jack Bucknell.
Yeah.
I loved those stories when they were happening. I even wrote about it like 10 years ago. But, you know, midway through the season, Ponce's like, I'm taking over this room, dude. This guy doesn't know anything. We called the meetings. We put together the plan. I didn't even get to that point.
Now, and again, like I said, he's gotten rid of guys like that who didn't work. Bang, real quick, out the door. But there have been other people, you know, undying sense of loyalty to Randy Feuchner for some reason. Maybe that was more about Ben.
Well, I think Randy had a past with him all through college in Memphis and places like that. So he probably felt the loyalty too.
But that's the problem, right? Like, that's the problem. You got to judge people based on the job they do, not based on how well you like them or, you know, whether they make your quarterback happy necessarily because they go out and play, you know, Neville Wood after practice with them. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it doesn't, there's questions to be asked about that. Anyway, a couple of former Steelers QBs throwing a little shade.
I thought you were going to talk about Cam Johnston and Brandon Johnson, then Johnson and Johnson.
We'll unload your OTA notebook in just a second. We got to thank the people at Southwest Greens for supporting the show. Visit southwestgreenspa.com. Tell Jake that we sent you. He'll get out there. We know a few people that have already talked to him that love the idea of not having to water the lawn, mow the lawn, you know, get it treated every couple of months, all the stuff that you have to do to keep the lawn looking nice so that you can go out and actually make some use of it, so the kids can use it, the pets can use it. You can do all that. All that same stuff without all the expense, the time, and the effort. If you go out and get Southwest Greens, beautiful artificial surface for your lawn that looks and acts like real grass, you'll have the best looking lawn in the neighborhood, and you won't spend nearly as much as everybody else in the neighborhood on making it look that good. SouthwestGreensPA.com. We thank them definitely for supporting Cabali and Mac. Okay, so practice did happen the last couple of days.
Twice.
OTA 1 and OTA 2. And plenty of people spoke. Before we get to playing any clips or anything from anybody, I want to start with this. What's Kaboom's biggest takeaway? And remember, you told us it's hard to tell anything at OTA, so let's not overreact. Let's not get crazy. But, you know, your biggest takeaway from the first 2 days of OTAs.
What I also said was, if anybody's going to be looking good out there, it's going to be the receivers, because they're just set up in that capacity to, with the naked eye, look good, and they haven't disappointed. I mean, DK hasn't been around, but whatever. Roman Wilson obviously looking good. It even goes deeper than that. Calvin Austin, they all look good, but it's set up on 7-on-7, 11-on-11, walkthrough type situations. Skoranek looking good. I know people might go crazy on that.
I saw your Skoranek tweet yesterday.
I think the point I was making there is you need those type of players that can fill in on a third down, a guy who can maybe have a start from here to there, a guy that can be a special cores, special teams player. You don't need all number one draft picks. You need guys like that to fill out the roster, the Harmon Killebrews, the Miles Killebrews.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look, if Ben Skoranek is wide receiver.
Skoranek looked pretty decent with some catches, too.
Okay. If he's wide receiver number five, I'm fine with that.
We're still talking about in a very controlled environment. But Cam Johnson, man, he's what? I mean, you have to understand, they gave him a nice boatload of money last year, and he lasted about two quarters, their bringer. Right. And I know Corliss Waitman filled in admirably, but this guy's just different. And he tore that Leighton knee up pretty good in September. So we'll be looking at 4, 8, 9 months away. He's booming the hell out of the ball.
Man. Well, that's good. I'll take a solid
off. He's Jamil Johnson's name. Brandon Johnson looking extremely good. See, he knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we've had a couple people mention Brandon Johnson in the comments over the last couple of weeks. And what is he running, like wide receiver 4 or 5 there with Skoranek in that area?
He's different groups.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll move him around. But, you know, once a lot of times when you see there, you say, hey, who is that number 19? Oh, Brandon Johnson. Oh, I don't even know that's his number. They've changed numbers 100 times already. I believe that's his number. Oh, who's that 19? Oh, then you start watching the 19, like, hey, this guy, I'm not saying he's wide receiver 2 or 3. But he could be a guy just, you know, he was on the practice squad last year, and you're looking to for somebody to maybe fill in at a 4 or maybe even an outlier and making a team, maybe, depending on what move they do moving forward.
Where's he from? What's his backstory?
Brandon? I can tell you right now, I haven't looked up Brandon Johnson's backstory.
He's out of UCF. I usually
tend to shy away from practice squad players because,
well, you're at OTAs.
They don't typically make the team, unless you're a guy like Ross Tucker's favorite person in the humor in the world, Max Hurlman.
Max Hurlman out there turning heads, playing six different positions.
Tiny, tiny, tiny guy. But last one off the field, sort of like first one off the ice.
First one off the ice. Yeah, so, I mean, look, we're talking about depth wide receivers, guys who might see a handful of snaps from week to week if they make the team. The one thing you did mention is that somebody was looking really agile. He's looking really quick, and we got the answer to why he's looking like that yesterday after practice.
To come back a little leaner, just because it gives me a.
Why is it play? Why is it? I want Broderick Jones. This is what happens when you try to do everything yourself.
Yeah, I wanted to come back a little leaner, just because it gives me a chance to gain weight, like going into the training camp and throughout the season, and instead of coming back heavy and then having to lose weight just to gain it back, because you know it's just a hard process. So. You know, I just wanted to focus on coming back at a good enough weight to where I can maintain, but also gain if I have to. So,
how much do you weigh right now?
I think I'm like 305, 310 or somewhere in that range. Last year I played at like 325, 330.
Okay, so Broderick Jones has dropped like 10 or 15 pounds. He's moved to left tackle, where it doesn't sound like he'll admit it, but he probably feels a little bit more comfortable, his natural side. This could be the key to unlocking this dude.
The key to unlocking this dude's right there.
Yeah.
Not TJ, between the ears. He gets that figured out. I think, you know, the possibilities are endless with this guy. He's one of the more athletic guys. And what I love about this offensive line is so many different kind of personalities. You got tough ass, hard ass Isaac Seumalo. You got all business Watani. You got Zach Frazier. It's just like zoned in on his game. You got Mason McCormick a little bit in between. Tough guy. Flips that switch in game day, but nicest guy in the world. And you got almost, for lack of a better word, the class clown always laughing, Broderick Jones. Nice group. Nice mix, man. I like the mix. They're not all the same. They're all extremely different personalities, and I like it.
This is what I wish they would have done 5, 6, 7 years ago. Spend 2 or 3 off seasons focused on the offensive line, because they did. They tried to piecemeal things as that Villanueva, Ramon Foster, David DeCastro, Marquise Pouncey generation aged out, rather than bringing in young guys slowly so that they could learn from those vets and establish their own chemistry behind them. Now, it sounds like it's working now. And the one thing you've repeated through the offseason, and I agree, I think it's true, nobody's giving this offensive line, outside of Steelers fans, even some Steelers fans, aren't giving this offensive line the level of credit it needs to get for the way they played the first 3 quarters of last year.
It takes a lot of time to get these guys to develop. Then they have to develop their individual style. Then they have to individual as a unit. And you're bringing 3 guys in, or what? 4 guys, Fatonu, McCormick, Frazier, and Broderick, all within 2 years now, I guess. I know it's been 3 years, but this one doesn't really count quite yet. Those guys going to need some time here. Need some time. So they look good. And you know what? Another thing I mentioned I need to get in right now, we were talking about what you can notice
from the
training camp. I think one guy, and I'm the last person to talk about, maybe not. I don't really have a big ass. But he's putting some weight on his ass, and obviously found a position where they're going to give him one last opportunity is DeMarvin Leal. Considerably bigger than last year.
Really?
And it looks like they're going to give him every opportunity to be a chance to play outside linebacker.
Outside line, so on the edge.
Yeah.
So
understand, he was at tweener forever, and now he's put on the weight. I don't know exactly what, but he's noticeably bigger. Now he had major injury last year with a neck injury. He couldn't get out of bed for like a month or 3 months. I don't think that put any weight on his rear end, but I think I haven't seen him on the defensive line. He's more working with Alex Highsmith right now.
Huh.
So it's his last opportunity, and it's a shame that it comes to year 4 where they're finally saying, okay, this position might be best for you.
Well, like you said, he's been a tweener because of his size the entire time. He was never going to be a true hand in the dirt D end on this defense. And the problem was, I think he's got a decent pass rush set, but I don't know if he was ever comfortable doing that from a 2-point stance or lined up on the outside on the edge, either one. And can he cover? Like, you've got TJ, you've got Highsmith, you've got Herbig, you've now got Sawyer as well. And you're going to, good luck cracking that top four rotation.
Absolutely. Plus, he has to learn. I mean, he's after practice and give, you know, Alex Highsmith and Denzel Martin, their outside linebacker coach, all the credit. They're working with him. I mean,
this is the opportunity, this would be the opportunity.
He's following Alex around everywhere, and Alex is showing him. Alex is not against showing people. Once again, one of the nicer guys you'll ever meet, Alex Highsmith. He's more than happy to help that guy.
I was going to say, this would be one of the opportunities because TJ isn't around. So take advantage of the spring reps. You can crack the top four in that edge rotation. You can get an opportunity. I imagine he'll get the opportunity during camp too, if the TJ contract extension negotiations drag on. He'll get a chance to show himself at that position, if nothing else.
Yeah, and once again, Jack Sawyer is talented, but this is a different level now too. There's 30, or in this case, 40, 45 defenders that are college superstars. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So, but I mean, they're not drafting Jack Sawyer to put him on the practice squad or to cut him in training camp. Like, DeMarvin Leal is going to have to play his, you mentioned he put a lot of weight on in the ass. He's going to have to play that ass off in order to crack the roster, I think.
What I've been told was he didn't get much good teaching at Texas A&M.
Okay.
And after they draft him, they realize this is going to be a little bit of a project.
Yeah. I mean, it's shown. And like you said, with the injury added to the mix too, this is kind of, it might be too little too late, even if he does show out during camp.
This is stuff you look at OTAs though.
But you're right. This is the stuff you look at OTAs.
It's Marvin Leal's ass.
And stop looking at dudes' asses. That's weird. I mentioned the secondary the other day, and I think that's worth bringing up because Slay, we're not allowed to call him Darius.
I said to him, I'm like, why Slay? He goes, well, my dad's Darius. Just call me Junior. And he corrected him. Darius, it's Slay. I'm like, well, I've never heard that in my 20-some years before. Usually, call me whatever you want. No, it's Slay.
And then he got like four questions about why, like you said.
I said, I'm like, what? I cannot let this pass. But hey, that's a guy right there. You could tell he's a crafty vet, man. I like.
Do you think before I play something he had to say that may allude to some more shade in a possible direction on the other side of the ball?
I don't think they realize what they're saying. I don't think.
Let me play it then. Let me play it, and then I'll ask you the question I have about Slay as a veteran presence on the defense and in the secondary.
Man, just the fact that, you know, like I said, try to get ahead, definitely with me not being here. So get ahead, try to learn as much as I can, and then, and just work with the guys. So, it's got to be a coordination in the back end.
So he was asked about, the importance of being at OTAs, basically, or what he could take advantage of from being at OTAs, even though he's a veteran. And he mentioned, it's a new spot for him, obviously, new team. So he gets to know the guys. Joey Porter Jr. was asked yesterday what he thinks of Slay. And he said, well, it's the first day I met him. But he seems like a cool dude. Told him I watched his tape as a kid. And so that's my question. Is this an opportunity for Joey Porter Jr. at a point where he has to take another step forward? Otherwise, I don't think he pays off on what is, in essence, first round pedigree, right? Take him with the first pick of the second round. But, he's got to clean up the penalties. We know that. I don't think, other than the massive number of penalties, and that's like asking Mrs. Lincoln how she liked the play, other than the whole Abraham getting shot in the back of the head thing. But I don't think he played poorly. I think his coverage skills are great. You can put him on an island with anybody. And a lot of D-backs take penalties when they're covering somebody one-on-one trying to take away the other half of the field. I'm not being a Penn State apologist.
Not 17, though.
Yeah. I would like to see, you don't lead the league in penalties. That's probably not great. I think maybe he learned some stuff from Slay that helps clean things up, and he can still maintain that sort of one man on an island sort of coverage. It takes away a half of the field.
When you think about it, he now has his second cornerback coach and his third running partner in 3 years. I mean, it was Peterson, I guess, first year, then obviously Jackson last year. He needs to take that step and become that guy he wanted to be last year. Maybe a little premature calling himself Sauce Gardner and Patrick Surtain. But I think that might be the offshoot benefit of Slay being here, to be able to get that guy rolling. I thought you were going somewhere else, because there's a handful of guys who are saying, yes, it's very important being here for camp. Very important.
I was kind of going that direction. Yeah.
I don't think they're really realize what they're saying, and what we're, I don't know if these guys are really tuned in to saying, when they say something like that, oh, he must be talking about Aaron. I just don't think they're wired like that.
Well, that's when it's the job of the impeccable Steelers PR staff to notify them that you're probably going to get asked questions about showing up for OTAs, right? Like, that's probably going to happen.
But who's going to tell Slay, 13-year vet, 34 years old, what to say?
They don't need to tell him what to say. They just need to tell him, hey, heads up, everybody's going to ask about showing up for OTAs because of the whole Rodgers thing. Just be aware of that when you're answering the question. They're experts. They know how to handle this kind of thing, the whole Steelers PR.
Not when it's raining like heck and we're all like huddled underneath a underpass or whatever the heck that was.
An underpass? You're underneath the overhang.
Overhang, underpass, whatever.
You're under Pat Narduzzi's office, basically.
Yeah, it was not pretty yesterday.
No.
Looks pretty nice out there today, but I'm sure it's going to rain in about 10 minutes.
It's Pittsburgh. If you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes. One more guy that we've already heard from this offseason here on our show, but he spoke the day before yesterday. We'll let you hear that in just a second, because Kaboom did bring up the wide receivers. But this happened yesterday. And look, I know we're going to be cynical about it, but when you got an opportunity to get excited about something you're not usually excited about, you get excited about it.
Strike three, and he struck him out. Strikes him out.
Oof.
Oh no, he blocked us. Mac is just frozen. Does that mean I have to take over the show? If so, we're in trouble. I guess that was none other than Paul Skeen striking out six guys. I did not watch the game, so I can't even tell you what happened right there. Oh, no. I just got a message from Chris Mack that said his power went out. What is he living in? He's living in some... It's going to be a minute before he fired up. I think what Mac was getting at right here is we're going to have a special guest coming up here, none other than the great Kevin Gorman of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, as we like to call him, Gormy. And interesting enough, he throws up a Skeens video that just freezes everything. I don't know if that's... Thanks, Phil. Why don't you jump on? Yeah, I need some help, buddy. The great Phil Maines texting me. You can tell I'm a good number two, maybe, but I'm not a good number one. If anybody wants to look up my nose, you can see it if you want. This is painful. Because go behind the scenes a little bit. Mac pretty much sets up absolutely everything, and I just show up. So I have no idea what's even on the. Now everybody's texting me, making fun of me. This is great. Another day to make fun of me and my, like that hasn't happened enough. But Mac sets up literally everything, and I show up, maybe get some guests here and there. Maybe I should shut my text message off. I know. I you're right. I mean, Phil, maybe we could just talk here. Ask me some questions, Phil. He said I couldn't even get Phil, by the way, the great Phil Maines of the Pat McAfee Show, the one that makes, we like to call him the money man. Actually, I don't know what they like to call him. I call him that. I'm sure that it's unbelievable. I think Max House runs on like hamsters in a hamster wheel or something. How is this possible? He only lives like 5 minutes down the road from me. What a disaster. It's like the Buccos. Mark Malone. That's what I can do. I could take some great comments. Yeah, okay. Mark Malone, just take a nap. I see where you went there. I guess the new up the nose is going to be the new nap. Oh, no. Mac, I'm telling you what. And I had to go to, well, it looks like I'll be late to OTAs. Not really. They don't get on the field for a while. No, Mike DeCourcy just texted me. I did not go to TJ, but I do live in Thomas Jefferson area. Kids go to school, so if I'm paying all this taxes, at least I can get a free hat from the Thomas Jefferson baseball coach. But I guess we could talk a little bit more about. Hey, Gormy, since you're on, right, since you're like texting me, just write some stuff down so I can read it here. So it'll be like it's a, it'll be like it's a interview over the phone via text message. Yeah, everybody's feeling bad for me. This is unbelievable. Maybe this teaches you kids something out there. You got to be more prepared than I have been for this. I did have to go to OTAs, and I do have to write some wrestling stuff that I'm a little bit behind on. So this is unbelievable. Where is he? But who else is looking good at training camp? I don't know.
Did you unplug something?
Seriously? Who, me?
Yeah, you.
How would I unplug something? I'm sitting here talking for 15 minutes by myself. Phil Maines is like texting me questions. Gormy's calling it a debacle.
What a debacle. Oh my God. What is going on? Speaking of which,
what a debacle.
What's going on? This never happened until you came on.
This is what I get for leaving Baldwin for Jefferson Hills, Gormy. You never know when the power is just randomly going to go out.
Cabali said that he's better suited as a number two, and I texted him, "You're Mason Rudolph." He didn't read that one.
Oh, I thought you meant something else. I didn't know. I thought you were talking about, like, when I said number two, I thought you were talking about taking a crap or something.
I would have to send you a plunger emoji.
I used it last night about 11 o'clock. Because I blocked up the toilet. I'm like, oh, time to make the donut, so to speak, right? Go clean out the toilet. Mac, I've just been talking gibberish for 15 minutes. You take over.
15 minutes. I was gone for like seven. 7 minutes, maybe. Wow. I don't know if I should take this the right way or not. Brian Garrett, I'm Joey Bart. You're Henry Davis.
Who's that make Gormy?
Andy Rodriguez.
No, I got it. He's Bubba Chandler, just waiting on deck to come in.
Hey. There you go. Look at Cabali with the Bucko analogies. All right, Kevin Gorman covers the Pirates for the Trib and was nice enough to join this total shit show this morning. Welcome in, Gormy. How you been?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, guys.
We just played right before the power went out. We just played the 7Ks from Skeens yesterday out in Arizona. I want to save the discussion about Skeens because that's probably a more in-depth one that we could talk about at greater length. And also because the story of the last 2 days in Arizona was not the pitching necessarily, although Skeens was great. It was these dudes are actually hitting the baseball now. And we don't celebrate 500 anymore in this town. We shouldn't. But they're one game under 500 since Shelton got fired and Donnie Kelly took over. You're around the team. Do you get the sense that something has maybe turned in the right direction? I'm not saying they're going to be a playoff team. I'm not going crazy. They're probably not even going to work their way back to 500. But it feels like things are at least moving in a positive direction.
Yeah, the mindset has shifted a little bit. And I think part of that was, you know, I think Shelton was a bit of a dead man walking. Everybody knew that this was a guy who was managing every day for survival. And that's no way to manage a team. You know, you're making decisions based on what's best for that night and that night alone because you're worried about getting fired the next day. Don Kelly has brought a little bit more of a relaxed let's enjoy this game atmosphere to it. You know, he's a guy who knows what it's like to fight for the final spot on a roster and to appreciate being in the major leagues and to enjoy every second of it. I also think that he's a true extension, because he played for the man, of Jim Leland, and bringing Gene LeMond on board has helped that extension as well, that there's, you know, some guys who have experienced success not only in Major League Baseball, but also with the Pirates. And I think that's important. But I think more importantly than anything is that they kind of got out of that schneid where they had 26 games with four runs or less and weren't able to have the big offensive breakout. You know, when I talked to the hitting coach, Matt Haig, about that, he said, you know, the hardest thing to do when you're in one of those funks is to preach patience. But he felt like, you know, there were times when they were making hard contact. There were times when, you know, they weren't getting the results, even though they were getting, you know, the effort was there. And Don Kelly has numerous times pointed to a game where in the fifth inning they had three flyouts to the warning track, one to the wall, and as signs that they were making hard contact, that they were driving the ball and just weren't getting the results. They were hitting the ball to opponents. But that, even though they didn't get any results out of that three at bats, and I think it was like, I'm not sure if it was, you know, Horwitz and Canario were two of them. Even though they didn't get the results, they were indicators. And sometimes the indicators may not be important in the grand scheme of things, but they're telling. And I think, you know, when you look at O'Neill Cruz's exit velocities, a lot of people get caught up and say, you know, it's nonsense. Who cares how hard he's hitting the ball? Well, when it's an indicator of hard contact, usually it tells you that there's good things to come. And so I saw signs at the end of the last homestand that the Pirates were hitting the ball hard and that they were making solid contact. And, you know, you saw that after being shut out in Arizona on Monday night, that they scored 19 runs in the next two games. And they had a chance on Monday night with the bases loaded. And I think it was the 3, 4, 5 hitters up. And went down 1, 2, 3. And that just has happened too often for this team. And I think with their pitching, if their pitching can continue to deliver quality starts, if the offense can start to provide some support like they did yesterday for Paul Skeens, there's a chance for this team to turn it around. But like you said, I think turning it around and getting to 500 is almost an unrealistic expectation, because they've dug themselves such a deep hole. And the other part is the Pirates are 6-4 in their last 10 games, and everybody in their division is at least 6-4 or 7-3 or 8-2 in the last 10 games. So it's hard to catch up when everybody else is playing at the same level or better than you are.
Gormie, I am very interested in Gene LeMond, 78-year-old, been out of baseball, what, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Did Donnie Kelly just need somebody to rattle some ideas off of him? What's his role? I mean, how much input does he have in what Donnie Kelly likes to do, wants to do, or have you been able to get to the bottom of what his role really is?
I mean, he's simply an advisor. He wasn't even named the bench coach. They didn't name a bench coach. They're kind of splitting that up with multiple people. Mike Ribello's doing some of the advanced work. You know, they've got Oscar Marine, the pitching coach, involved in some things. The way they looked at it was, there's not one way to find somebody midseason to replace all the things that Don Kelly did. You know, Chris Truby was brought up from AAA in Indianapolis, where he was the manager to be the work with the infielders. So they've divided Don Kelly's role. I felt like the one thing that was missing from Derek Shelton's staff was having kind of that old sage on the bench with him to say, hey, this is a good time to think about this XYZ scenario. And that's no offense to Don Kelly, but I felt like that was what, you know, Shelton needed, was somebody with the wisdom of being a major league manager and having seen thousands of games and having experienced every imaginable situation. And I think it was wise for Don Kelly to reach out to someone. And I think Jim Leland would have probably been his number one choice. But Leland said, I'm 80 and I'm retired and I'm employed by the Detroit Tigers. That's a no, triple no for him. But, you know, I think Gene Lamont's the closest thing you can find to Leland, or at least as an extension of Leland. And so I think he's simply there to say, hey, you know, this is a good time to think about these scenarios, or this is a good decision, you know, trust your gut, to be someone who said, to help guide a guy who's never managed at any level. He started off as a scout after his playing days, was the first base coach for the Houston Astros, and then the bench coach for the Pirates. For someone to say, hey, you know, here's the decisions you have to consider And here's whether, you know, whether you're making the right ones or the wrong ones, to give him some advice. But also, you know, his best advice is just to be Don Kelly and trust yourself. You know what you're doing there more than you realize.
I know it's only 3 weeks on the job for him, but I had somebody ask me this on Twitter last night, so I'll ask you. If he claws them back to, say, 500 or 80 and 82 or whatever it may be to finish the year, is the gig his?
I think that a lot of that depends on what they do with the general manager position. If Ben Cherington's going to stick around, then I would imagine he might want some continuity there for the sake of his team. But if they're going to bring in a new general manager, that guy's probably going to want his own man. Or Don Kelly's going to be spending the whole time looking over his shoulder. So I think it's not so much about what the Pirates do record-wise the rest of the way. It's what type of decisions they make in the front office, because they have replaced everyone below Ben Cherington. They brought in a new, you know, new research and development, which is the analytics end of it, that new pro scouting director, new, you know, new farm director. It's they've changed every level. So I think that may have bought Cherington some time. And certainly, you know, they have a number six, the number six overall draft pick this year. So they're going to get another top 10 pick under Cherington. And as much as you can criticize Cherington that he hasn't drafted well on the position player side, he did draft two high school bats, and they're both looking very good in the minors. Tamar Johnson in AA Altoona and Connor Griffin at low A Bradenton. It's just that they're at least a year or more away from helping in the majors, but he's drafted very well with the arms. And I think it's just a matter of whether Bob Nutting runs out of patience. You know, I think the problems with the Pirates all begin with Bob Nutting and trickle down. It's not a bottom up problem. It's a top down problem. And so if he's going to make more changes, you know, you almost have to wonder if it's worth, you can blame a lot of things on Ben Cherington, and they've been well documented by the media and the fans. I don't know how much changing the general manager is going to affect how everything works top down. Until the Pirates decide to make the investment into this team and into the major league payroll, you can talk about investing in every other facet of the organization. Until you invest in the major league payroll and get this team some bats and be willing to trade some arms if you have to, the Pirates are going to be in a holding pattern, because what we see right now isn't good enough. It's as simple as that. They don't have the offensive firepower to compete. They have the arms. Certainly their starting pitching is good enough. Their bats aren't.
It really feels like the PR debacle and just this team early in the season lost a lot of not only casual fans, but some hardcore fans. Can they get those guys back without adding to the payroll? Like you mentioned, Nutting has to come out and spend some money, or these guys or these hardcore, mid-core fans are just saying, I'm done with them. I want to see some effort put in from Bob Nutting before I come back. Is there any sense of that from you?
Well, sir, I mean, certainly winning cures a lot of problems. And in fact, you know, here we are two games and we're talking about how they've performed offensively the last two games. And that could change drastically when they go to San Diego this weekend. The thing that I think the Pirates could do is take a risk. And they're so averse to taking risks that they haven't made the big trades that we're all looking for. You know, they swung some deals at the trade deadline last year. And, you know, I thought a couple of them were good. You know, acquiring Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was a very good trade for the Pirates. Some of the other ones didn't work. You know, Brian De La Cruz and Jalen Beeks didn't work out quite as well, but they acquired, you know, Nick York for Quinn Priester. That turned out to be, you know, it looks like it's a potentially good swap for the Pirates, because Priester's already been traded by the Red Sox to the Brewers. But, you know, they have Andrew Heaney, a guy who is on a one-year contract, who's pitching very well, that some team could say, hey, that could bolster the back end of their rotation. They could trade a Mitch Keller, who's the longest tenured Pirate and is locked up through 2028 at a very affordable contract. And his record and results aren't indicative of how well he's pitched this season and how much he can maybe thrive as, you know, a number two or three starter in a really good rotation, as opposed to the number two starter behind Paul Skeens. The thing that's curious to me is that the Pirates have, to some degree, auditioned some of their top pitching prospects this season, whether it's four spots in their major league rotation or whether it's four spots as potential trade chips. But we've seen Thomas Harrington. We've seen Mike Burrows. We've seen Braxton Ashcraft. We've seen Hunter Barco dominate at the AA level. And he tweaked his arm, a shoulder, and he's working his way back to pitching at AAA Indianapolis right now. But the Pirates do have starting pitching prospects that are either in the majors or on the cusp of being in the majors. And that's something to consider, is that you could, you know, swing a trade there and try to go out and get a position player. But standing pat and bringing in waiver claims or guys that have been designated for assignment, you trade cash considerations, that's just not good enough. You know, I mean, I think Alexander Canario was probably a good pickup for the Pirates, but it's as a fourth outfielder. It's not as your starting everyday left fielder. You know, I've said this many times, that the signings of Tommy Pham for $4 million and Adam Frazier for $1.5 million weren't bad offseason signings, except for the rules that the Pirates are putting them in. Tommy Pham, as their fourth outfielder, you bring in a veteran with playoff experience who's played a lot of baseball. But in making him your starting left fielder and having him bat below the Mendoza line is just a disaster for the Pirates. Having Adam Frazier be your super utility player who can play, you know, second base, third base, first base, shortstop, left field, right field, he can kind of, you know, go anywhere you need him in a pinch, although he's best suited at second and has performed, I think, pretty well there given the circumstances. But they're having to play these guys as everyday players. And that's, you know, that's because they've had some injuries that have depleted their depth. But it also shows you that maybe you weren't as deep as you thought you were in the first place.
Well, and they can deal those young arms, like you talked about, Gormley, to go out and get some bats. That's great. But I think what people want to see is, you know, you reference guys like Frazier and Pham. They want to see a legit starter, a legit starting bat brought in on a multi-year deal that they can get excited about. And, you know, we know Josh Taylor. Josh always, when we text about the Pirates, says, maybe they just don't want to come here. So what's, you know, I'm sure you go into visiting clubhouses too and talk to some of those guys. What is the, I don't know, thought on what the Pirates organization is from outside those walls at PNC Park? Is that part of the problem? Guys just don't want to come here.
I don't know about that. You know, I've talked to some Pirates who've been acquired and said, hey, like, you know, people do want to come here, that they love PNC Park. They think it's a great place to play. They love that Pittsburgh gets behind the team when they win. And they've all seen the excitement around the team. They don't want to play for somebody who doesn't want to pay them. That's as simple as the business end of it. And you think about an Anthony Santander would have been a good acquisition on the free agent market. You know, he signed for $100 million. And that's Brian Reynolds' money to the Pirates. That's the top pay, you know, the salary that they've ever paid out is $106.75 million. And it's, you know, the question is, if you're not going to pay your own players, you know, why would you pay guys from the outside to come in when you don't know exactly what you're getting? I mean, if you're going to pay that type of money, you want a guy who's going to be a perennial all-star. And that's why Reynolds' start to this season has been such a disappointment, and why they're so risk aversion into bringing in somebody from the outside. Because if they make that type of investment, the Pirates can't afford for it to not work out. They simply aren't willing to take that chance. And that's why they keep talking about drafting and developing. But right now you could make the case, and I've made it, you could make the case that although the Pirates did good things by signing Ke'Bryan Hayes, Brian Reynolds, and Mitch Keller in succession, one year after another, to long-term contracts that locks up what could be considered a core to this team, they may have signed the wrong players if that's all they're going to be willing to spend. The money should have been spent on O'Neill Cruz and Paul Skeens, because those are your two top talents. And you know, those are the two guys you really want to be building around. Instead, we're talking about, at what point do the Pirates have to trade Skeens and Cruz, even though they're years away from, you know, it's a year away from arbitration for Cruz, but years away from even free agency. And that's a talk that has dominated this part of the season because of what a debacle it has been for the Pirates on the PR front with all the things that have gone on outside the baseball field. I think, you know, players would find this attractive if the money's right, but there's been a lack of willingness to spend historically under this ownership group. And I don't know that anybody trusts that you're going to sign a contract and that the team's going to be willing to build around you, for one, because they haven't built around Paul Skeens, who's coming into them, one, as a lottery pick. I mean, they won the inaugural draft lottery and lucked into Paul Skeens. They got a guy who, as a rookie, won National League Rookie of the Year and finished third in Cy Young voting, started for the National League in the All-Star game and had a historic rookie season. And then yet they still failed to go out and spend to build a team around him. And we're seeing the results. It's almost cost prohibitive to not spend around him if you look at it from that perspective.
Yeah. My thought about it all, Gormy, is if you're O'Neill Cruz, if you're Paul Skeens, the only way you're getting anything for him if you do trade for him, because why in the world would they sign here, first of all, as you said, built around them, and second of all, their market value somewhere else is going to be sky high that the Pirates aren't going to be willing to pay that. It seems like they're in a self-made problem here where they have nowhere to go, but it's going to have to be traded or just let them play out.
And I'm a fan of letting them play out. You realize your small market inequity and you say, okay, we're going to look at it the way Cleveland does, is maximize their time here and be willing to trade them for assets when it's time for them to move on. And whether that is in, their second year of arbitration or, at the trade deadline of their final, the year of their contract, that could be the Pirates' way of doing things. But what they've done is they've allowed themselves to be in a position where they have a supreme talent. And I could use Gerrit Cole as an example. And they've had to trade them for prospects. You're trading a guy who, should have been a legit Cy Young Award candidate at that age, 27, 28 years old. And instead, the Pirates trade him for four prospects, only one of whom really turned out to do much for the Pirates. And that was just Joe Musgrove. And the majority of Joe Musgrove's success has been with San Diego. Where it turned out to work out for the Pirates is that they acquired David Bednar and Andy Rodriguez, who is still, yet proven as a major leaguer. So, you're kicking the can down the road if you're trading Paul Skeens. As much as people are throwing out these ridiculous returns that they get for him, you don't trade a superstar for prospects. You build around the superstar. That's how you win. You take the superstar and you build around him. We've already seen what it's like to, one, let the superstars walk. That we lived that life early in our lives when the Pirates let Bonilla and Bonds and Drabeck go. But we've also seen when the Pirates, I went back and looked, the Pirates were on a very similar trajectory to the 1985 Pirates this season, before this Arizona series. They were one game behind the same pace through 55 games. That team went on to trade some of its top players. Tony Pena got traded and brought back Andy Van Slyke and Mike LaValliere. Rick Rodon got traded and brought back Doug Drabeck. That's what rebuilding teams do. The Pirates have already endured the rebuild phase. They should be enjoying right now the phase where the guys that they drafted in that rebuilding phase are up in the majors, and they have that with Paul Skeens of 1-1, with Henry Davis of 1-1, who should be not just his personal catcher, but the starting catcher. He's showing right now that if you give him a chance to play every day, that Henry Davis is better than Joey Bart.
What's wild to me is that, and you know what, you bring up the early 90s and letting Bonds, Bonilla, and Drabeck all walk. What they got out of that was three straight runs to a division title in the NLCS and one base hit away from a trip to the World Series in 92 before it all blew up. That's what you can get if you just ride it out. At the very least, let it ride out. We're less than 12 months into Paul Skeens making his major league debut, and we're already talking about his fans. Oh, they're going to have to trade him. Like, that's just ludicrous to me. And I don't understand why they don't see. Maybe they do, and they just don't care. If you graph how much they've spent on major league payroll over the last 10 to 15 years, year by year, almost in lockstep follows how much they make in attendance and concessions revenue. You spend $90 million on payroll, you're probably going to make $95 and just enough to clear the books, right? Same thing. Oh, you only spend $60 million on payroll, you're probably only, because fewer people are going to come because they're disgusted with the offseason, you're probably only going to make $60, $65 million at the gates and at the concession stands. What I don't understand is if they were willing to go in, as we all talk about all the time, spend $125, and that's still going to keep you probably in the bottom third, if not bottom half of Major League Baseball payrolls, definitely bottom half. You just spend $125. The people will come.
Spend $100. Yeah, they haven't cracked $100 yet. Crack $100 for the first time. Show that type of commitment. They gave out a $100 million contract to Reynolds. That was a step in the right direction. This offseason was was just, you know, a team that was in a holding pattern and decided we're going to do everything internally. And it didn't work. I mean, you had your fingers crossed that you would get internal improvements from Jack Sawinski and Henry Davis. And you gave Sawinski all of, what, 2 weeks in the majors before you sent him down? And you made Davis a guy who catches once or twice at most in a week? You know, I think you've got to invest in the players that you invested in, if you ask me. I mean, you made an investment in Henry Davis as the number one overall pick. And I've heard it, you know, some people say, well, they're getting Bubba Chandler as the number two prospect or number three prospect, depending on whether you're talking MLB Pipeline or Baseball America. But one of the top prospects in baseball coming up from that same draft, that's akin to having a number one pick. And it's okay if Henry Davis. No, like Henry Davis has the talent to be a very good catcher. And he's already showing signs of being that. And I think he has the power in his bat to be a much better hitter than he's shown. But, you know, you don't bring up the number one overall pick and stick him in right field, a position he never played before, except for, you know, what, maybe 20 or so games in Indianapolis and Altoona. You know, the Pirates, they talk about having patience and having a plan, and then they make these last-second diversions where they go in the opposite direction, like they did with Henry Davis bringing him up to play right field, like they did with Andy Rodriguez this year, where they had him catching exclusively all spring. And then when it comes time to make the final cuts, and Andy Rodriguez is your opening day first baseman, when your infielders haven't thrown to him but one game in spring training, that made no sense. And it was just kind of like, oh, total bait and switch. Here's what our plan is. Well, at the last second, we're going to change directions. And that tells me there was some panic that, you know, that the plans that they had, they just kind of threw them out the window at the last second. And that isn't a recipe for success, no matter whether you're the Pittsburgh Pirates or you're the Los Angeles Dodgers.
We got any more time there, Mac, or no?
Yeah, we got as much time as you need, Cabone.
Wow.
Hard-hitting questions.
Well, I sent you a video, and I thought you were going to pull up that video. I don't know if you're going to or not.
Oh, yeah.
Gormy, we do need to bring this up.
Hold on. Let me pull it up.
Gormy, we tend to fool around a little bit on this podcast.
It makes me worry what's coming, because
Gormy, you know
Cabali's got he's got the receipts on everybody. You know this.
Yep, and he sent me one on you last night. Hold on, here it is. It's the Gormy spin move.
Here comes the famous spin move.
There it is. Look at that.
Adamski with the block.
Now you have to realize that I was about 25 pounds heavier in that video.
You look more like
maybe 35 pounds heavier in that video. So that was me at my absolute heaviest.
Look at that. Look at this.
Jeremy Fowler. There's no block right there.
Hey, by the way, that was the game where myself, I'm trying to think, Will Graves. I think we had Jeremy Fowler and Adam Crowley. If I'm missing anybody, I apologize, but we beat the interns. A bunch of 40-somethings beat the Steelers interns, which included Joe Lofton. Like
that,
we beat them. We beat them, and I made a bunch of three-pointers, which Cabali doesn't – he always fails to mention that part when he shows the spin move. But I made a bunch of three-pointers. But the problem was we had to play again the next day. And we had to play again the next game. And at that point, I was gassed. You could see I hadn't played in years, and I probably – boy, I'm guessing at the minimum I was about 275 in that video, just by from the looks of me, and I'm probably about 35 pounds lighter right now.
Yeah, there was a lot of rumors about that was the move of the younger Gormy at Baldwin High School.
That was one of them.
That was St. Gwendolyn CYO Gormy back in the day.
I only played
1 year for St. Gwendolyn CYO, but that was grade school St. Gwendolyn's. I was let's just say I was known more as a streetball player than I was for my high school playing days.
Yeah, I, you know, I'm guessing you're in a committed relationship, so I won't bring up the meeting in Chicago with.
What are you doing?
You can bring it up. I don't care.
I was bringing that up. Gormy, swipe left or swipe right? How'd that work? And
Cabali, like I told you, he has the receipts on everybody.
The person he went and met didn't have an appendage.
No.
Wait.
I went on a date with a woman who was in a wheelchair, and he killed me for it. But I had a great date. I had a wonderful date. She was beautiful. She was intelligent. And we had a fantastic time together.
See, he's open-minded.
It was simply going to meeting at Starbucks and having a green tea for me and a coffee for her. It was just a really good conversation and enjoyable person to meet. But telling the guys while we're at Lou Malnati's that I'm going on a date, and they said, "Oh, what does she look like?" And then they started swiping on her pictures and saw that she was in a wheelchair. And I'll never hear the end of it.
Corby didn't know. He's lying right now. He showed up and was like, "Corby's a good dude." So. Well, it's in Chicago. What do you expect? It's not like he was going to move to Chicago.
No, it was just having an after dinner drink, essentially, is all it was.
Yeah. I used to take
I'm surprised Kaboli doesn't have. I'm sure he probably sent you pictures of me sleeping on a road trip.
No, you got upset.
I'm legendary for with the trip was that we drove to Ottawa for the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that's when I probably figured out that I had sleep apnea or there was something. I didn't know if I had the flu or what, but. I slept 13 hours of a 16-hour round-trip drive. And the other one that I did was we drove to Baltimore, me and Joe Rutter, and I slept, three and a half hours? And I woke up, and there was the Baltimore exit. I said, "Hey, Joe, there's the exit." And he was ready to kill me. I slept the whole ride, and I woke up just in time to tell him, "Hey, there's the exit. You want to make sure to take it right here."
Up at training camp one time, Gormy was in the back room, and he fell asleep while typing his story. So I took a video, and all I saw was 175 N's.
the literal Z's on the page.
Boom.
You're sleeping.
Right onto the keyboard. Gormy, I'm glad we could have you to talk baseball, talk Buccos. You look great, my friend. Fellow.
Where you go to get your Pirates news, I go to Gormy at the trip.
Absolutely. And thank you for putting up with Kaboli trying to throw you under several buses.
Thanks for sharing that video. I'll be forever indebted to you. I'm going to have to find some.
Watching.
I have some Kaboli photos myself.
Trust me.
I have to find a couple of Kaboli sleeping or Kaboli in the press box making faces. I have some receipts as well.
Trust me, Gormy. I have some pictures floating out there on the interwebs that I don't even think you could top. Might have went viral.
Kaboli has receipts he has receipts on everybody. Yeah. Everybody. It's great.
And he'll use them without hesitation.
I don't think I have any Macs.
I'm sure you do. You just don't want to admit it.
I haven't looked. I'm going to have to look.
All I know is
in the 2 minutes that your power went out, Kaboli went into complete chaos. Just completely lost it.
Yeah. Gormy, you should go back and find the episode where the guys came to fix the furnace, which is in the room right behind me. And he melted down for a good 10 minutes.
No, well,
I think he talked about Cobra Kai.
No, I melted down because I said Mac does 99.9% of the work and I show up, so I'm not quite prepared to know what's going on next year.
Well, you know, it's funny. You mentioned that. I Karate Kid was on the other night, some station. I ended up watching the majority of it. And what I didn't remember, I remember how it ended with the crane kick. But what I didn't remember was Johnny giving him the trophy and giving him positive words and how, like, at the very end of the movie, I was kind of disappointed by how it ended.
Well,
it
just, if you look, the start to number two was the ending of number one. They wanted to end it on a positive note. The real true ending was the start of number two where they were leaving and Kreese grabbed the trophy and broke it and called Johnny a loser and was going to beat him up and Miyagi came and saved him, but they wanted to end it on a high note. So if you look at the beginning of number two, Gormy, that's really the end of one.
Yeah. Well, I just thought that, I thought it could have ended just on the kick and that alone. But that part of it disappointed me, but I actually pulled the other day. I can't remember. Somebody was having a problem with, there was a kid, they were having a problem with their arm and their arm hurt. And I pulled the Miyagi. I gave them and fix their arm. It was amazing. It was amazing how something you learn in a movie like that, you know, just like how you learn the wax on, wax off. I learned the Miyagi trick and fixed their arm immediately.
There was a callback on Cobra Kai with that, and Daniel LaRusso did that, and he goes, "I have no idea what I'm doing." And he says, "Medic."
Kaboli's convinced that's actually counts for real first aid. Just rubbing your hands.
I guarantee that's done by more people than Gormy. I bet you there's a lot of people out there that have tried that.
Gorman, we appreciate you taking the time and putting up with us, the power outage and all of it. And we'll catch up with you again soon, buddy. Thanks again.
Hey, I just wish you would have had the Squeezebox song as the intro, because that's one of my fondest memories of Chris Max, is him singing Squeezebox in full Yinzer down at spring training in Florida.
Almost that was,
that's one of our spring training highlights, Mac.
Yes.
Is he inebriated?
Maybe a little bit.
Okay.
There's nowhere to drink in Florida, so.
You know. You got any video of that there, Gormy?
Nope. No, I don't. I wish
I stopped performing when the cameras are off or when the cameras are on. Anyway, Gormy, thanks, bud. We'll catch up soon. We appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep, we'll see you. Kevin Gorman of the Trib. He covers the Buccos. When we want Pirates news, that's where we go.
Hey, and I wasn't making fun of an amputee woman. I was making fun of Kevin Gorman.
It's a little bit of both, wasn't it?
I mean, Gormy was looking for love. And it was like he walked in and it was like, uh-oh. I know that's what it was. So Gormy's trying to, you know, massage us a little bit. Plus, I mean, I wouldn't know unless he told me.
Oh, man. That's fantastic.
Gormy swiping right back in his early days. This had to be
10, 15 years ago.
Probably the Villanueva year, maybe even before that.
Okay. So, yeah, a while ago is what you're saying. A long time ago. All right. We're going to play some other stuff. We'll play some more clips tomorrow. Anything else that comes up at OTAs. Congratulations. We confirmed with Jason, who won the autographed Pat Freiermuth helmet, that he is, in fact, the winner. He gets, as soon as I get his address, I will be shipping that off to him. And don't forget, we've got a Paul Skeens autographed baseball.
Where is it? Pull that up.
The baseball?
Yeah, let's see
it. I don't have it readily available to just pull
it. You got it on the phone.
Well,
the guys want to know what they're voting for here.
It's a baseball autographed by Paul Skeens. What else do you need to know? They don't. So if I just show them a picture of an autographed Paul Skeens baseball, they'll believe that we have it.
Look at it. Look, it says Skeens on it.
Paul Skeens baseball right there.
Can I zoom in on some of those photos you have below that?
Nope. I'm going to go just like that so you can't see them.
I can see it. I can see it, so you're screwed.
There's nothing good. It's just crap for the show.
Your power went out. What's going on over there?
I have no idea. It's Jefferson Hills. Somebody probably unplugged something at a power station somewhere.
I live like, what?
5 minutes down the road.
My power's fine.
Well, congratulations. Good for you. We're all real happy.
I wish it went the other way around. Then I wouldn't have been scrambling.
No, you got a little scrambly there for a minute.
Oh, you don't want to watch that.
No, we'll edit that out maybe.
No, for the... I don't know. Phil, I was having conversations with the great Phil Maines, who was texting me.
Oh.
I said, I might need to have you jump on, Phil. He goes, there's no way for me to get on. I'm like, you're correct.
Thanks again to First and Goal Collectibles, firstandgoalsports.com, for that autographed Skeens ball that we will give away when we get to 2,500 subscribers on YouTube. Fast. So go to Cabali and Mac on YouTube and get subscribed now. We'll talk again tomorrow morning, not quite as early because there won't be a practice for Kaboom to race off to, but we'll wrap up the first week of OTAs and a few other things, a little more shade thrown at the Steelers by someone who's been in Pittsburgh as a football player before, some more sound from practice, let you hear what people are talking about down there, and someone we know who's maybe mildly not even internet famous, social media famous, showed up at a big game the other night. We got to talk about that. More Yinzers in the wild.
Some wrestling.
Yep. A whole bunch.
Big Saturday night main events coming up in a couple weeks. Boy, is that set up for Gunther versus the great Bill Goldberg.
Ooh.
It's setting it up, isn't it? In
everything
Atlanta?
You've been predicting as of late has ended up working out
Atlanta, so let's hope that Goldberg can come down the street and
I think
Saturday night main event.
I think someone's feeding you information.
Nobody feeds me jack. It's the other way around. They think I'm going to say it, tell everybody.
I think you're getting fed information. I can't wait to hear what your thought
information
is.
Information from Pat about Aaron? Absolutely not, because they probably think I'm going to spill the beans.
You would too, just like you tried showing Will Howard throwing at practice yesterday.
I didn't even know it was him. Then I'm like, I think that's Will Howard.
You figured it out real quick. And then figured out, I think, that you were going to get in trouble if you showed anymore.
Well, I didn't know who it was first. Okay, enough of that. I couldn't see, so I'm squinting. I'm like, what's his name? Costanza. I can squint from a mile away. I'm picking up coins, dimes.
All right, let's wrap it up for today. We'll do it again tomorrow around like 10:30 or so. We appreciate you joining us, and for all the support, go subscribe on YouTube to Cabali and Mac. Thanks again to our presenting sponsors, the Dan Heck Team, heckteamhomes.com, for all they do for us and all of our wonderful sponsors. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning on Cabali and Mac, if we can see you.